Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com. Let's go to the phones. Let's start with Tim in Florida. Hello, Tim. Thanks for calling today.
You're welcome. I want to know what you think are best practices for how you can influence your family and friends away from the world into the church. And I not only want your short take, but if you could also recommend books or videos that will give us best practices.
Okay. So when you say you want my short take, is that your way of telling me to keep it short? Keep my answer brief?
No, that's my way of telling you that I recognize that you can only give me so many minutes.
Yeah, I understand. No, I have a penchant for going long at times. So, no, I understand. Well, best practices, I think ultimately the best practices were given to us by the Lord, and that would include pray always, rely on God's providence, ask Him for what you need, be vigilant in not only guarding your own soul and taking care that you don't mix the world with your faith. As Jesus said, you know, you were in the world but not of the world. So these are all rather pro forma, not to diminish the importance of what Jesus said, but they're so kind of basic and obvious that that's where we should start. Pray in the home. Let your children see that you and your wife are really, truly followers of Jesus, that it's not just lip service, or it's not just, you know, we do the God thing for an hour a week on Sunday when we go to Mass, and then the rest of the week, God doesn't really have any role to play. So things like praying the family rosary every day, having images of Jesus and Mary in the home. It's a great idea. It's a stupendously great idea to enthrone images of the Sacred Heart of Jesus and the Immaculate Heart of Mary in some prominent place in your home, where not only the kiddos will see them every day, but also your visitors and people who come to the house, maybe the plumber. Good conversation starters, that's for sure. These are all things that I grew up with, and the reason I offer you these kind of basic things, Tim, is because, as I said, I'm the oldest of eight children, and none of my brothers and sisters fell away from the faith. My parents had some kind of secret sauce going, and as I've looked back on it, I've tried to like reverse engineer. What did they do that made the Madrid household such that when things got crazy later in life and, you know, the adult issues that unfold and marriages and all the other things that happen, how is it that they raised eight kids, none of whom ever fell away from the Catholic Church? And I'm convinced that some of these salt of the earth basic details, like the ones that I just mentioned to you, are integral to doing that. At least that's how it worked for my family. Now, that's what my wife and I have tried to do with our family, and so far so good. Doesn't mean that we haven't had bumps in the road, or doesn't mean that we haven't had children who have been wobbly here or there. We have. But in the long haul, I think that kind of really solid foundation of prayer, mom and dad, the kids see that mom and dad really love Jesus. They really are true followers, images in the home, a prayer life that goes beyond just Sunday Mass attendance. If it's possible to give them a good Catholic education, that's great. Not everybody can afford that. Another thing, and this might strike you as maybe archaic because so many people are glued to their phones nowadays, but in my family growing up, we had a huge library in the living room. And so one thing that was beneficial for me was that I loved to read anyway. And so for me, reading was a treat, not a chore. But my mom and dad made sure we had tons of books in this library. And by what I mean by large library, the bookcases that my dad built in the living room, they were floor to ceiling. And we had like a cathedral ceiling in that part of the house. So we had thousands of books, and there were Lives of the Saints and all kinds of interesting things for us to read, and then more heady things as we got older. So that helped an awful lot. That helped me kind of read my way into a deeper, maybe a little more intellectual understanding of the faith. Another thing is that my mom and dad prayed for us assiduously every day. You know, I didn't realize it at the time, but later on, each of them in their own way told us about how they would pray for us, especially praying the rosary, that we would remain close to the Lord, and we did, not by our own power, but by God's grace. So those are some things that come to mind. On the negative side, I'd be really careful to the point of being strict about what you let your kids watch on YouTube and what apps you let them put on their phone and who they text and talk to. You may know from listening to the program that I'm a really big proponent of not giving your children smartphones unless they're at least, say, 16 years old, 17 years old, preferable. It's a disaster when you give kids smartphones and smart tablets that are connected to the internet, and even worse when they don't have any kind of filters. But kids are pretty adept at getting around a lot of filters. So giving your child a smartphone when he's 10 years old, 12 years old, is just a stick of dynamite, in my view. And I've seen this happen so many times. So I would be really careful about those things. You want to protect them as much as you can. And in due time, you won't be able to protect them anymore. But if you've helped them grow strong and well-rooted in their Catholic faith, in their identity as believers in Jesus, then when your immediate influence begins to wane because they're moving on into college and they're not under your direct supervision, those lessons and that foundation that you poured early on will be the basis for them remaining strong in the faith. You know, and things will happen, and there will be difficulties and perhaps even crises and problems, but they'll still have that foundation to work with. So off the top of my head, Tim, there's my short form answer, kind of on the positive side and on the negative side. What do you think?
Two things. One, I love the metric about how all your siblings stayed in the faith. Could you tell me what the age range of your children is? And
sure.
Could you talk a little bit, I don't want you to, obviously, there's only so much you could say, but can you give us a little more indication of how much the pollution of the culture has seeped in of this day, as mm-hmm. opposed to when you grew up. What I'm trying to say is, how much has the pollution of the culture seeped into your children? And
okay.
I guess the other thing is, the last thing is, the more important thing for me is, I don't have a wife and kids. My task in my family and among my friends is to convince siblings, adult nieces and mm-hmm. nephews, are almost adult, to influence them.
Sure. So you're the caring uncle who wants to see your nieces and nephews retain their faith and not lose it. So they're not your children per se, but they're children that you care about.
No, yes, and my nephews, and my mother, and mm-hmm. and I'm the only one who's close to being Orthodox, and
okay.
and so you can imagine how tricky a situation it is to try to do this without having people shut the door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you have to be subtle. You don't want to be the crazy uncle, in their view, anyway. You want to be the uncle who cares, and they know that it's coming from your love for them, and you're not grinding them on them or judging them, but you want to see them happy. Yeah, that's all good. Well, just to address that briefly, there are two massive distinctions. One is between the way I grew up in the 1960s and then into the 70s when I was a teenager, versus how my children grew up. And then there's a distinction in the midst of my children. So let's start with the age range, since you asked. So my oldest son is 39. My youngest son is 19. So there's a 20-year span between them. Total of 11 kids, 6 boys, 5 girls. Of those, how many are married? I believe 6 of them are married. And it looks like maybe another one or two is heading in that direction. We'll see. So among them, there are 25 grandchildren, and so I've been able to see kind of to what extent Nancy's and my parenting efforts have played out, and also to see what are some of the things that we did that they're doing, and what are some of the things that we did that they're not doing. So it's interesting for me as now a grandfather to look back and see what stuck. So the first dichotomy or the first distinction would be, obviously, when I grew up, there was no internet, and there was no mass media in the sense that we understand it now. So clearly, I remember as a child there being maybe a handful of television stations, ABC, NBC, CBS. There were no cable outlets. So the amount of television fare was very, very limited to maybe, I don't know, six, seven, eight channels at the most. I remember some of my early memories are like, I remember getting up early in the morning and the test pattern was still on because they would turn the network off at midnight or whenever it was. There'd be like a Old Glory there and a patriotic hymn, and then there would be just a test pattern or snow until the next morning when they would turn the TV network back on again. So that was a big difference where we didn't have a lot of access to mass media. And so I didn't have the pollution, as you describe it, coming into me through those avenues. My parents were really careful about what movies we could see. And so it was anathema to even think about going to see a movie that was rated R. I mean, that would never happen. My parents didn't watch rated R movies, so that would never happen. Now, so that's a big difference between the generation I grew up in and the generation that my children grew up in. But even within their 20-year age span, there was a big difference that we can see very clearly that the older six or so, they grew up without the internet. It just wasn't there. So they didn't have phones. There was not really any access to websites. And so they too kind of had that experience of being unplugged from the internet. But we definitely could see a difference in attitudes and in issues with the younger five who did have the internet. Now, without endangering the privacy of any of my children, because they're all adults now making their way in the world, I'll just simply say this to be especially candid with you. One of my failures as a dad is that I gave in and allowed a couple of my kids to have smartphones too early. And I fought it and I fought it and I fought it and I fought it. And I don't know if I was just tired that day. I don't know what it was, but I got kind of worn down. And hey, Dad, everyone else has it. How come I can't have it? All my friends have this. How come I can't have it? And I'll be safe and I won't do. And I look back on it, and nothing disastrous happened, but I realized that was a turning point where I made a mistake that I regret because I consented. I gave in. I caved in, whatever. And I shouldn't have done that. I should have, in retrospect, said no. And I'm willing to be the unpopular dad if that's what I need to do. So I offer you that as just another data point. Giving kids smartphones is a disastrous idea if they're below, say, 17 years of age. And I know for many people that sounds ludicrous. It's like, what is wrong with you? I mean, this is the 21st century. Get it together. I still believe it. I really do believe that you're handing your son or daughter, or in this case, your niece or nephew, a stick of dynamite because of all the things that are out there that are not difficult to get to. And there are all kinds of crazy freaks out there who are trying to get to the kids. And they have all kinds of devilishly ingenious ways of doing that. So I take my stand. That's a hill I'm willing to die on, honestly, even though I know it's an unpopular view. So in our family, I did notice that the older six turned out, they all turned out well, but they turned out differently well than the younger five who had access to the internet. Does that make sense, Tim? It's kind of a long explanation, but does that make sense?
Well, that makes a lot of sense. I deny myself a smartphone, but I'm still working on a flip phone as long as I can. That makes sense. And if you could also just as a reminder, either repeat or elaborate on what the uncle dealing with adult family members should do.
Now that's a question that I'm not as equipped to respond to from experience because although I am an uncle to many nieces and nephews, I haven't had as much time, I guess, to concentrate on that because I've been so busy concentrating on my own kids. But like I'll tell my nieces and nephews, hey, respect your parents because they grew up without Google. They had to graduate from high school without Google. They didn't have, you couldn't just look it up. I mean, you had to go crack open a book and read it and assimilate it and memorize it and regurgitated on the test. So even just little things like that, just encouraging my nieces and nephews when they were younger, listen to your parents. It may seem like they're just being difficult right now, but they know what they're talking about. So that may be the last thing I'll leave you with, Tim, is the encouragement factor is huge, especially when they realize that you're not seeking anything from them. This is not for your benefit. It's for their benefit. And when they realize that, you know, you've got some gray in your hair, you've been around the block many more times than they have, and you're doing this out of love for them, I really think that has a great positive effect on young people. And quite frankly, there may be times, you may have already seen this, where your nieces and nephews might be reluctant to go talk to their parents about an issue, but they will be willing to come speak to you about it because you're an uncle, not a dad, and you've shown love and patience and encouragement. That can go a long way with them.
Can I ask you, you know, it's a tsunami of, you have so many people in your orbit that you care for that are being, it's triage. What do you recommend to keep your spirits up? How do I keep my spirits up? And to keep focused and to keep from despair when the devil is attacking all these people and me from all sorts of angles at once.
Well, remember, greater is he who is in you than he who is in the world. So you have ample promises from the Lord that if you are close to him and you are, you know, doing what he asks you to do, come follow me, he said. So if you're doing that, if you're picking up your cross and following him, you're close to him in the sacraments, you're praying the rosary every day, you're in the perfect position. And remember, too, I'll leave it at this, Tim, because, I mean, I've got so many more things I'd love to tell you about this, but I'm glad you asked these questions because it offers us a chance to think about these important issues. I'll leave you with this thought, and that is that emotions are different from virtues. Virtues are habits that are built up over time that are not typically the default position. Usually one's default position is the vice, laziness, lust, gluttony, etc. So the virtues, which are built up over time, like building muscle when you work out, they then become the default position. And so how do you avoid being overwhelmed would be concentrate on those things that God has put in front of you. Don't spend an inordinate amount of time watching the TV news. I watch as little as I can. I mean, I have to watch some just to stay current for the news or for the show. But don't let your mind get polluted and poisoned by all of that chattering and bickering and fighting and all that. Read a lot. Read more than you look at your phone. And you have a flip phone, so you're way ahead of the crowd. And just be really careful what you let in, kind of like the food that you won't eat because it's got a lot of calories or it's got strange stuff in it. I think all the same rules apply when it comes to the spiritual life. And I keep coming back to this verse. Jesus said, in the world you will have tribulation, but be of good cheer, for I have overcome the world. So emotions come and go, like the weather, but your virtues and your commitment to Christ, that's going to stay the same. Great call, Tim. I give you a gold star for that one. Thank you.
For more of the Patrick Madrid Show, visit...